We here are all such innovative people. So I am telling you, if you want to change the world, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to build the Iron Man suit, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to play theme music during your convocation speech like a badass, we're at Georgia Tech. We can do that. I am doing that.
And I am doing this. Now, what is this, you might ask? Well, this is the podcast known as What's the Good Word. I am your host, Joshua Julian, providing your one-stop shop for anything and everything that you want to hear about Atlanta sports. You know, we got Falcons, we got Braves, we've got Georgia Tech, and today we've got the Atlanta Hawks. So plenty to cover. So if you want to sit back and let me talk to you, yeah, we can talk about the Atlanta Hawks as they finish out their season. As we're recording this, they have exactly 5 games left before we get to the playoffs. And there's a lot to cover in this episode. I'm going to give you the summary of the 5 games that have happened since the last time we spoke. Probably know a lot of the results, probably know some of the storylines. I'm just going to give you a brief recap in case you missed it, if you were traveling for business or you were doing something important. That kind of speaks to the format of this show, just for anybody that's new. I try to give as much news as possible on the front end and then give an opinion piece on the back end because I know that everybody's got places to go. So if you just want a brief recap, if you want to remember, oh yeah, that's right, that's what happened, you can hear the news and then move on. Or if you're here for the hot sports take opinion, if you're here for the breakdown that I'll do on, you know, maybe DeJounte Murray is the guy to keep, maybe Trae Young is the guy to keep, who else is a keeper? If that's what you're here for, we'll do that towards the end of the show. I want to make sure I've got something for each crowd that is out there, because I know that there's different types of sports fans. So the last time we spoke, I was recording on Thursday, March 28th. We're now in a completely new month. And I told you the Hawks had already beaten the Celtics once, and they had another game coming up. And, you know, after the first game the Hawks won, they came back from down 30. Well, they had another incredible performance to take down the Celtics again. So that is 2 wins over the East leading Celtics, the juggernaut that is Boston. And let me tell you, it took a lot. DeJounte Murray put up 44 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists. On top of that, 1 block and 2 steals. Now, he did shoot 18 of 44 from the field, Kobe-esque, if you will. He was 6 of 19 from 3-point range. But he almost single-handedly willed this team to victory in this game. He also hit the go-ahead shot in overtime, one of his signature right to left crossover pull-up mid-range shots in Jrue Holiday's grill to put the Hawks up 1 in overtime. Something I did not mention, it did go to overtime. The Hawks didn't get a ton from the bench. The leading scorer from the bench was Garrison Matthews with a whopping 7 points. But the starting lineup was really the story here. On top of the 44 from DJ, you had 24 from Bogdan Bogdanovic. At 21 and 13 rebounds from DeAndre Hunter back in the starting small forward role, partially because Jalen Johnson had to miss a couple games. So you had running a starting lineup of DeJounte Murray, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Vit Kreshki, DeAndre Hunter, and Clint Capella. Who, Clint Capella, by the way, 2 blocks, 13 rebounds, 12 points. Not a bad day for the big center in the middle. I'm running out of words. It's incredible that the Hawks are able to beat this team again on Atlanta's home floor. But still, I mean, 31 points from Jason Tatum. Celtics were back to full strength. They had Jrue Holiday. They had Derek White, Kristaps Porzingis. They had their full starting lineup playing in this game, and they all scored in double figures, and the Hawks were still able to take a win. So I'm not saying it means anything for the potential eventual first round matchup that the Hawks might get against the Celtics, but it's a good sign that they've already taken 2 games from the Celtics this season. So again, a Herculean shooting effort from DeJounte Murray, some efficient nights from DeAndre and Bogdan, and it was just enough to get past the Celtics. Now, they played another one of the top East teams on Saturday, March 30th, against the Milwaukee Bucks in Atlanta. And unfortunately, the Hawks could not pull out a win in this one. It was 122-113 Milwaukee. 36 points, 16 rebounds from Giannis Antetokounmpo. Not exactly a ton the Hawks can do. There's nobody on this team that is capable of guarding Giannis. The Bucks were missing Damian Lillard, so there was that, but everybody in the starting lineup again scored in double figures for the Bucks. 21 from Chris Middleton, 18-5-5 from Patrick Beverley. Not the greatest sign for the Hawks, but you did have 38 points and 10 rebounds from Bogdan Bogdanovic, so he deserves some props for that. 12 of 23 shooting, so also efficient as well. DJ had his double-double, 20 points, 12 assists. He did shoot 7 of 19. The efficiency is not exactly the greatest with him. And then you also had 10 points from Bruno Fernando off the bench. And there not many other notable performances there. But Bogey did have a good game. The Hawks overall did not have the greatest game. The defense was just bad enough, and the offense was just below its normal averages. And so that's where we get to that kind of a loss. But, you know, the Bucks are one of the best teams in the East. It's one of those things that you almost don't expect to beat a team like the Celtics, especially twice in the same week. And then you kind of get a game against the Bucks, and it's okay. Yeah, we're back to earth. But then the Hawks had a pretty important game after that on Monday, April 1st. They were playing the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls, one of the teams that the Hawks are fighting for with positioning, the Bulls right above the Hawks in the conference ladder at the 9 seed. So if the Hawks were to overtake them, hypothetically, they would get a home court advantage in that first round of the play-in games. The Hawks were able to take a win against the Bulls, 113-101. Held the Bulls to 39% shooting and 25% from three. Now, DeMar DeRozan did have 31 points because the Hawks don't seem to be able to stop individual players, but everybody else, you know, Kobe White had 22 points, but it was on 21 shots. Ayo Dosunmu had 15 on 13 shots. There wasn't really anybody else that hurt the Hawks a ton in this game. And on the Hawks end of it, nobody scored more than 20 points from Bogdan, although Bogdan did do it on only 7 shots, 6 of 7 from the field, 6 of 6 from the free throw line. And Vit Kreshky actually did not miss a shot. He was 6 of 6 on 3-pointers for 18 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists. Really, really playing that connector role well in this game. And then Jalen Johnson got a reintroduction off the bench, 25 minutes. He had 11 points on 12 shots with 2 steals. And Kobe Bufkin got back in the lineup, 17 minutes. Only had 3 points, 2 rebounds, and 3 assists, but it's great to see him back out there on the floor. He also contributed a block. So the Hawks getting closer and closer to full strength. You know, it's something to write home about. Double-double from Clint Capella, as per usual, with 2 blocks added on. DJ did have 17 on 17, but he also added 8 rebounds and 6 assists. So the typical well-rounded performance from DJ. Everybody kind of played to their strengths here. Nobody had anything flashy, but it was enough to get the job done. And that was followed up on Wednesday by a win against the Pistons, 121-113. This game was notable for a lot of different reasons, and it wasn't just the outcome. One, Jalen Johnson got back in the starting lineup and immediately put up a triple-double. His first triple-double of his career. He did it on 10 of 14 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3. He also added 4 steals and a block in this game, 28 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists. And you also had the double-double from DeJounte Murray and Clint Capella in their typical statistical categories, 24 and 11. 11 assists from DeJounte Murray, 11 points, 16 rebounds from Clint Capella, in addition to 2 blocks. Kobe Bufkin had 9 points off the bench with 2 blocks and 2 steals. Everybody, there were some flashes here, right? Vit Kreshky kept his role, even though he moved to the bench. He played 20 minutes, didn't contribute a ton in the box score, but Vit is more there as a connector, right? He plays solid positional defense, he moves the ball, he hopefully hits open shots. It's nothing too crazy. 26 points from DeAndre Hunter as well on 11 of 16 shooting. The most notable part of this game, though, was not that. It was the fact that the Atlanta Hawks gave up a 50-burger. 50 points to one individual player. And we were playing the Pistons, so you must be thinking, oh, it was probably Cade Cunningham, right? Well, Cade Cunningham did not play. Oh, then probably Jaden Ivey. Nope, Jaden Ivey was 3 of 15. So then Jalen Duren? Sir Thompson? No. It was Malachi Flynn. Malachi Flynn. He couldn't catch on with the Raptors for most of the beginning of his career. He was almost dumped on the Pistons. And in this game, he also added 3 steals on top of his 50 points, 6 rebounds, and 5 assists on 18 of 25 shooting. A career day for the bench player in Malachi Flynn. It was not enough, which is the other crazy part, is that you get a 50 piece from an individual player, especially a bench player, and it was not enough to beat the Atlanta Hawks. It says a lot about the Pistons. It says a lot about the Hawks' defense that they allowed that. But, you know, on top of that, nobody else, only 2 other people scored in double figures, and they were both at 11. So a win is a win is a win, but it's one of those things where the Hawks are still, even in wins, making headlines for all of the wrong reasons. And that brings us to the final game. The Hawks had a matchup against the Dallas Mavericks on Thursday, and unfortunately it was a loss, 109-95, notable more for the fact that the Mavericks, A, scored 40 points in the second quarter, really kind of put the game out of reach, and then the teams combined for 30 points in the fourth quarter. So not exactly great stretch performances from either team. The Hawks did keep Luka Doncic to 25 points on 25 shots. I consider that a win. He did also have two steals, a block, and 12 rebounds. So he still produced. And Kyrie Irving also added 26 points on 10 of 21 shooting. So not the greatest defensive performance, but hey, 109 is still pretty good for the Atlanta Hawks. They did hold him to 40% from the field. The Hawks also contributed 21 turnovers in this game, which is really, I think, where the difference kind of came in, giving the ball back a lot to the other team. But on the Hawks' end of it, Jalen Johnson was not good from the field, only 3 of 12, but he did have 16 rebounds. Clint Capella had 13 himself. DJ had 16 on 17 shots. Just not a great day for really anybody. Garrison Matthews did contribute 14 off the bench, and you had 9 points, 3 rebounds, and a steal from Kobe Bufkin. You know, Bruno Fernando had 10, 13 from DeAndre, 17 from Bogey. Nobody really to write. I mean, 95 points in a game is not, especially in the modern NBA, not good at all. So, you know, welcome to the Atlanta Hawks week. They went 3-2, beat a team they probably weren't supposed to beat, but they did it again, beat the teams they were supposed to beat, lost to the teams they were supposed to lose to. It kind of sums up the Hawks season, more or less. Currently sitting at 36-41 at 10th place in the Eastern Conference still, but they are only a half game behind the Chicago Bulls. So there's still an opportunity there to get into the 9 seed, get home court for the play-in game, which they'll have to win, and then beat the loser of the 7-8 game on their home court, which right now is the Heat and the Sixers. Now there is space for the Pacers to fall into that. But the Hawks are pretty comfortably in there. Actually, they're guaranteed to be in there because the Nets, I don't know, I'm not going to do the math, but the Nets are 6 games behind the Hawks. The Hawks have 5 to play. Now, the Hawks 5 to play, it is a pretty strong schedule remaining. The day this episode is going to be posted on Saturday, that day the Hawks will be playing the Nuggets, followed by games at home against the Heat and the Hornets, and then the Hawks end with a 2-game road trip to Minnesota and Indiana for the Timberwolves and Pacers. So the Hawks will be playing 4 playoff teams, two of them being top of the West, 2 of them being middle of the road East teams, and then the Hornets, who have kind of packed it in for the season. So if the Hawks are going to have to beat that team, 100%. And so that kind of, it's been the long running talk of this season is, what will the Hawks do in the offseason? Because changes probably do need to be made, right? The Hawks are definitely at that point where we can tell that this roster as constructed is not going to do anything more than, you know, be a 500 team, because they've shown us that this year and the year before and the year before that. So there's got to be some changes. And the popular one is, do they keep Trae Young or do they keep DeJounte Murray? They've got to trade one of the two. And I think they should trade one of the two. The reason I think they should trade one of the two is it comes down to team construction. Once again, and I think I've talked about this multiple times on this podcast, but it's important to continue to say it, because I still see people trying to pick sides and say, well, this guy is clearly better than the other guy. You know, oh, clearly the Hawks defense is better with DeJounte Murray. Clearly the Hawks offense is better with Trae. They're both incredibly similar. I tend to lean towards Trae Young because I think Trae Young is a better playmaker. But statistically speaking, when you look at like offensive and defensive ratings for the players when they're on the court, the offensive rating for the two of them are within a single point. DeJounte's at 117.1 and Trae is at 116.3. And part of that, you could argue, is because Trae has played, you know, maybe more minutes. He might have played more with like bench units or, you know, injured teams or whatever. But then the defensive rating, technically, the defensive rating is actually higher when DeJounte Murray is on the court. Not significantly so, but they're both very, very similar in terms of, you know, advanced statistic impact. The reason that I say the Hawks should keep Trae Young is when you compare assist percentage, DeJounte Murray's at 26.9% and Trae's at 43.3%. Now, some of that, you can argue, is due to design, because when DeJounte is playing alongside Trae is the main ball handler, And well, when you've had DeJounte Murray, right? Oh, he's putting up double digit assists. Still, just watching the Hawks offense with Trey, I've watched the Hawks offense with Trey for the past, 5 years. Trey is the best pick and roll ball handler in the league right now. And it's not particularly close. DeJounte Murray is a good player, and I think he can be a lead guard somewhere, but he's more tuned towards getting his own shot. I think he playmakes well. He's very good at finding reads, but he is geared to find that mid-range jump shot. And that's kind of where the issue comes in. And I don't want to sound like an analytics nerd too much here, but the mid-range shot is the most inefficient shot in basketball because it's worth the exact same amount as a layup, but you're, much farther away from the basket. It's one of those things. And it just kind of bogs it down because he's got to dribble the ball to get into that shot. He's got to, go ISO to get into that shot. And so it kind of keeps everybody else outside of the offensive action. And so I think that keeping Trae Young around, you are more likely to keep everybody else in the action on offense. Now, keeping DeJounte Murray probably helps your defense because you don't have as much of a defensive liability, although Trae Young has been much better on that end this year, but he's gone from like one of the worst to just bad, but with opportunities to be good because he seems to have figured out at least some kind of a way to create steals, create turnovers using his quickness, which I enjoy. I think that to me was always the way that he was going to become a positive defender or a non-big-time negative, right? And DeJounte is kind of the same way. He goes for steals. He's just able to get a couple more because he's a little bigger, much longer, and he's always looking for it. But, comparing their advanced statistics, the effective field goal percentage is close. The true shooting percentage, Trey's got a bit of an advantage. The usage percentage is, it's all close. The pace is, the Hawks play faster when Trae Young is out there, which I personally would prefer. I think that's a big deal. DeJounte does kind of look to more slow the game down when he has the ball in his hands. But again, it's not that one is objectively better than the other. I think Trey is just easier to build an offense around because he is so geared towards playmaking. I mean, the dude was averaging almost 11 assists this year per game. He's back-to-back years led the league in total assists. He's been an Iron Man for his entire career. This is the first time he's missed significant time. And again, he's gotten better on defense. And I think part of the defensive problems, as I've said before, definitely comes down to roster construction. And I've seen a couple people make this point, and this is the point that I have continually come back to. It's neither DeJounte Murray nor Trae Young nor Clint Capella, nor DeAndre Hunter. It's really nobody's fault that the Hawks have struggled. It's no individual player's fault. It is roster construction. The roster has been poorly constructed basically since the conference finals run. You could make an argument that it was poorly constructed. It was just everybody played at their absolute peak and played out of their minds in the playoffs to take down those guys. And you did have the added benefit of playing a Philly team right towards the end of the process and watching Ben Simmons implode on national television and all that good stuff. The Atlanta Hawks do not have a number one defender. They've got a couple guys who could probably be number twos or number threes on that end where, DeAndre Hunter is a very capable wing defender as long as he is not guarding a superstar. DeJounte Murray is a very capable, gambler, free safety type who you can kind of station and let roam and, hey, go get me some steals. But when you're asking either one of those guys to be locked down perimeter defenders who buckle down and keep somebody in front of them and do that play by play, that's just not the role that they're built for. They're built more for supplementary defense. They're not built for, primary defense. The Hawks need a lockdown wing defender or at least another guy who can be that so then you can just kind of switch between the three. Either way, that has been the issues from day one. And this, bringing DeJounte Murray in, at the time I was excited. I overrated his own personal defense just a little bit. I will admit to that. When he first came, I thought he was the perfect complement to Trae Young. It turns out he has not been the perfect complement to Trae Young through no fault of their own. It's similar to like Russell Westbrook and LeBron James over in LA. It was never anything against Russell Westbrook, but it just doesn't make sense that they're together, because they both need the ball in their hands to be effective. And if one guy has the ball in their hands, you're kind of taking the other one out of the play. And you can't really manage that. So the Hawks are probably need to trade DeJounte Murray. He's got 4 years on a deal. He just signed a below-market rate extension, probably. If you can find a team that needs a lead guard or is looking to upgrade the lead guard, you can flip him, probably get some picks back, maybe get some younger guys. As long as the roster construction starts to make a little bit more sense, because I think Trae Young and Jalen Johnson are a great 1-2 punch to build around. Jalen Johnson gives you kind of the do-everything player. He's able to switch around on defense, help out in the paint, get steals. And then on offense, he's a good rebounder. He's become a good jump shooter this year. He's athletic enough to go to the rim. As he gets older, he's still only 22 years old. As he gets older, I think he'll start developing some more one-on-one moves, and he can start making his own shot. But as of right now, he's probably more reliant on Trae. But that's okay. But with those two guys, you can kind of fill them in with 3-and-D guys, right? If you are able to get some a 3-and-D wing and maybe one more guy who can kind of create off the bounce, I think Kobe Bufkin next year is going to explode. I think as the two guard next to Trae, Kobe Bufkin is an ideal complement, because he does play defense. He plays some gritty, hard-nosed defense. He creates turnovers on that end, and he's comfortable on and off the ball, which I think is the key to why the DeJounte-Trae pairing has never worked, is that neither of them are wholly comfortable off the ball. Trey's gotten better off the ball. He has made strides, but he still is, he's played his entire career with the ball in his hands. And you don't really want the ball out of his hands because he's that good of a playmaker. Same thing with DeJounte Murray. He's played most of his career with the ball in his hands. And while he has gotten better off the ball, he has been okay off the ball. It's one of those things, you're kind of asking him to get away from what's made him so successful, and it's weird. So Kobe has shown, both in his college days and here in Atlanta, he can play on the ball. He can kind of run a pick and roll here and there, or he can play off the ball, serve as a spot up shooter, and attack closeouts capably, keep the ball moving. He's like an optimized version of Vit Kreschke. Now, Vit is also 6'7", but either way. So that would be the ideal number two, or two guard next to Trae, if Kobe can kind of come into his own next year and really show up and show out. Then, if you want to hold on to DeAndre Hunter, I think he's best suited as a sixth man. He showed that when he was coming off the bench this year. He kind of has been pressed into duty out of necessity, but he's still been good. If you want to start him, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. He is a capable small forward in the NBA. I just think it would be better served to have him off the bench. The other issue becomes you don't really have the money to go out and get a, upgrade. So either way. And then the only other one is center. Onyeka Okongwu would kind of combine well with Jalen Johnson, to where they can both gang rebound, and two, the guys at the 4 and 5 both being able to switch out to the perimeter makes you very intriguing on defense. And I think that that's kind of been one of the things that's held the Hawks back the last couple years, is that Clint Capela has lost a bit of a step on the perimeter. And as he loses a step on the perimeter, he becomes, less switchable. And so now you kind of have to go more and more into drop coverage. It limits what you can do on defense. When Clint Capela was a defensive player of the year caliber player for a season, you could get away with kind of leaving everything up to him. But now that he is no longer that, he's just a good defender. You kind of needed a little bit more on the perimeter, and you just haven't gotten that this year. So, again, it's... there's so much that could happen this offseason. I would argue almost nothing should be nailed down except for Jalen Johnson. Everybody else could be on the table, and that includes Trae. It would take a godfather offer for me to move Trae Young, but if somebody comes with it, I'd be willing to listen. I would be looking to move DeJounte Murray first, but you cannot rule out anything. Nobody on this team, except, again, for Jalen, I think, just because of his age and the player archetype. That's a player that does not come along very often. Nobody is officially untouchable other than, I think, Jalen Johnson. Trae Young is as close as you can get to it without being it, because he is so great. But again, if somebody comes with a godfather offer that completely resets your franchise, like if the Spurs come back and are like, hey, we'll give you all of your picks back, plus a young player here or there, plus an extra first-round pick for Trae Young, then you kind of go, ooh, maybe. But if the odds of that offer coming down, I don't think are very high. So you're kind of left with, let's see what we can get for DeJounte. Maybe Clint has some value. What can we get for DeAndre? Like, gauge the market, figure it out. That's the easiest way to put it. So after that, we're going to also talk about prospects for the Atlanta Hawks, because the NBA draft is one of my favorite things in the world, and I've been doing a ton of videos on my TikTok about the NBA draft. By the way, if you want to follow me at SadAtlantaFan1113, you can go get all of my opinions on these prospects. I've broken almost every single first-round prospect down. Going to start doing some even more, but Bleacher Report recently released a mock draft. I'm going to give you some scouting reports on the two guys that were mocked to the Atlanta Hawks as guys that, you know, could potentially end up in the city of Atlanta. And in this mock draft, the Atlanta Hawks have pick number 10 to start off. That's their own pick. This is just based off records right now. It really would depend on how they do in the play-in tournament. If they win, they end up back towards 15. But regardless, the Atlanta Hawks at number 10 take Dalton Knecht out of Tennessee. Now, if you've watched March Madness, this kid is a certified bucket. He's going to be 23 by the time he enters the NBA. He's currently a senior. He played most of his career at like Northern Colorado or some kind of mid-major school. And he transferred into Tennessee this year, and he has been phenomenal this year. I mean, he's been averaging like over 20 points the entire season. Against Purdue in the Elite Eight, he put up 37 points. And it is all, I mean, he can kind of do it. He's a three-level scorer is what I'm going to put it as. He comes off a ton of screens for Tennessee. He's very comfortable catching off the screen. So if that ends up being his role, he's like Duncan Robinson almost. Just come around the screen. He could be a 40% three-point shooter as a catch-and-shoot guy. But he's got the athleticism. He's got the ability off the dribble to get to the other levels, get to the rim, get up. He's pretty explosive around the rim. He's got a beautiful jump shot again. He is a great scorer. It's so much fun to watch him score. He's a plug and play all the way. Defensively, he is rough. He's not exactly a perimeter stopper. He's 6'6", 204, so at the 2 or the 3, you can probably get away with him not getting like absolutely bodied, but he will need to improve his defense to really be a starting caliber player in the NBA. But if the Hawks bring him in and he's kind of their spark plug off the bench, honestly, if you bring him in, you can even look to trade Bogdan Bogdanovich and try to get some value from him, because Dalton Knecht I see being almost exactly the same player as Bogdan. It's like a bar for bar replica. The three level scoring, the ability to kind of play next to a star or by yourself as a plug and play scorer, but that doesn't add a ton on defense. That's kind of what I see. So if the Hawks end up with Knecht, you can bet that they also are working the phones to see if anybody wants Bogdan Bogdanovich, because he has been one of the best six men this year, in all fairness. So Dalton Knecht, plug and play scorer, all three levels. Absolute bucket getter, rains him down in all kinds of ways. Catch and shoot, attack closeouts, dribble handoffs, individual drives, it's all there. Now, in this mock draft, the Hawks also have pick number 18 from the Kings. This is a brief aside, but this pick has the chance of not conveying this year. The Kings have kind of fallen down more towards the bottom of the Western Conference, and if they do end up in the play-in and they do end up losing in the play-in, they will not have a lottery. They'll have a lottery pick. It is a lottery-protected first-round pick. So if the Kings end up in the lottery, they keep the pick. So you want the Kings to make the playoffs. Everybody root for the Kings. But in this draft, the Hawks have 18, and they take Kel-El Ware out of Indiana. Now, he's a 7-foot, 242-pound center sophomore. Played at Oregon last year, transferred over to Indiana, and has really played well in Indiana. And he's played well the last 2 months. There were some questions about motor. There were some questions about impact. And there were some questions about like how much of this is physical tools and how much of this is, you know, that you're drafting almost on the projection of what he could become. But he has been very good one-on-one, especially in the post. He's always kind of flashed an ability to hit jump shots, especially at Oregon. He was a top 10 pick when he was projected top 10 pick as a freshman before the season at Oregon, but he kind of tailed off in the season and slowly fell out of mock drafts. But the idea of him was always that he would be a center who could block shots and hit threes. He started to show a little bit more of the three-point touch, probably a year or two away from really coming in. But He definitely has the every athletic tool. Again, he's a 7-footer, but he can move out there. He's very above average at as a defender. He's shown the ability to be a shot blocker. And again, 3-point shot all the way, exactly what you would want out of him. He's always had, he had the touch in high school. Again, college, it's been kind of here and there. Hopefully it becomes more consistent as time goes on, but still a solid prospect. I'm pulling up Sam Vecenie's scouting report on him right now to get you a little bit more in depth, because Bleach Report does a lot of good work, but my one complaint with them is they never seem to go super in depth on prospects, and I'm just trying to make sure that I get another expert's opinion in here, because you guys can listen to me all you want, but the fact of the matter is Sam Vecenie's done this for, you know, 20 something years. So he won Big Ten. He was on the Big Ten All Defensive Team. He was second team All Big Ten. Again, 7 feet tall, and he's mobile. So bringing him in, if you bring him in as a backup center, assuming Clint Capela is no longer on there, he'd be very similar to Onyeka, except he's got a couple more inches on him. Able to switch out to the perimeter, ideally, kind of cover up for some of that. He might not be great in space, but he's long enough and just quick enough to where he could survive. He's not going to lock anybody down, but he will be able to kind of be there. He did have 1.9 blocks per game, and that's where you really like what you're seeing. Defensively, that's kind of where a lot of his draft stock is coming from, is his defensive play last year. He only averaged 2 personal fouls in 32 minutes of action last year, so not even foul happy, which is the one big question left with Onyeka Okongwu. And he finished 74% of his shots at the rim. Also averaged 2 dunks per game. So a good player to have in the middle. He's also filled out. When he first came into college, he was kind of skinny. So he's filled out to the point where he can make an impact around the rim. He was also a good rebounder, almost got up to 10 rebounds per game at college. And he did shoot 42.5% from 3, I believe, is what this article is saying. But either way, he will be asked to space the floor. He didn't do a ton of it in college, but again, he showed the flashes. If he's going to kill it in workouts, probably. I would almost expect him to rise above that level and kind of get more towards the back end of the lottery. But those are two names to keep an eye on. Dalton Knecht, Kel-El Ware, potential role players for the Atlanta Hawks. And that's going to do it for today's episode. I think I've bored you enough with the prospect talk. If you have any other prospects you want me to look into and cover, or if you have an opinion on the Atlanta Hawks and who they should keep, you can email me at joshuajulian26@outlook.com, or you can leave a review under this podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. Stay tuned for next week when we start the whole process over again. We talk about the Falcons, we talk about the Braves, we talk about Georgia Tech, and we talk about the Atlanta Hawks, because this is the one-stop shop for anything and everything Atlanta sports related. I'm your host, Joshua Julian, and I'm going to ask you the one question that all Georgia Tech fans now hopefully know.